I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you are listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. As per usual, in the studio with me today is Father Garrett Burns.
Hey, hey.
And Father Drew Hoffman.
Hello.
We are coming to you today from the studio of St. Brendan the Bold. Mm. How can you not like a name like Brendan the Bold?
That's not a real person.
It's also known as St. Brendan the Navigator.
I've heard of that. Okay.
Okay, so one of the guys actually discovered him a little bit. If you don't know St. Brendan's story, he was an Irish saint that, depending on who you ask, supposedly had a boat, may have been the first European in the New World. So he crossed the ocean, wrote stories about it, talked about discovering an island that some historians would say that might actually have been South America in this little Irish boat. So he's called St. Brendan the Navigator or St. Brendan the Bold. A couple of weeks ago, one of the seminarians discovered him and decided we need more honorifics like the Bold. Like, we have saints that are the Great, and that gets used way too often. We needed more creative things. So we have a whiteboard up on the floor that the guys live on, and that was the theme for the week of coming up with different names. Ooh. For saints. It was actually really clever.
Some good ones?
We had St. Dennis the Unstoppable, because he was beheaded and carried his head back to the cathedral. We had St. Francis the Beast Tamer.
Beast Tamer is pretty cool.
Beast Tamer.
That was my nickname in high school.
St. Leo the Hun Wall. Attila the Hun outside of Rome. There were some really, the whole board was full. Like, guys just would, it was finals week, so they were trying to avoid work anyways. So lots of brilliant ideas flowing out there. If Rome needs any help coming up with names for the saints, I know some guys will do some freelance work for them, do a real great job.
I've still got one girl in our fourth grade class that she calls me Father Garrett the Great, because I was preaching on Gregory the Great and was like, if you guys want, you can call me the Great too. And she was maybe the only one that heard that, but she's held on to it. So
it's stuck. I like that.
Man, I hope that follows you for a long, long time.
No pressure.
Now, one of the problems with our method of recording, we record a lot of episodes in advance, just it's necessity because of our schedules. But it often means that when we're recording, we're talking about something that's relevant in the moment, but by the time it sees airtime, less relevant. For example, the KU victory for the national championship.
Always relevant.
But it was kind of, refreshing. It was made new once again, that experience. Mm-hmm. And so it was like rushing. Well, we'll talk about this. We've already recorded this about consolation. Now I'm getting into a time crunch with my brain, what we've recorded and what's come out. But it was like going back to consolation. And so we were able to run back to that intense moment, which was actually like we had not gotten any sleep and we were very tired. And so that exact recording moment wasn't consolation. But
well, then this episode will be about refreshing what once was relevant that maybe is less so now. If my calculations are correct, this episode will air June 6th. It's early May right now. And right now it seems like a lot of people are talking in the Catholic world about the movie Father Stu. So we want to talk a little bit today about our experiences of the movie. You've seen it, Gare.
Yep.
You saw it the other day, Drew.
Missed the first 30 minutes, so I had to have someone explain to me all the boxing parts. But I got there.
Got there. And then I just saw it on Sunday with a few priests. If you're not familiar with the movie Father Stu, it's based on the true story of Father Stuart Long, a priest of Helena, Montana. While he was in seminary, he was diagnosed with inclusion body myositis.
Nailed it.
Yeah. Got it. Oh, well, I was a doctor before this, which is a progressive muscle disorder that would ultimately lead to his death. And so he was ordained in 2007, knowing that he did probably not have a lot longer to live. He would die in 2014. So he was roughly about 6 years a priest. I heard Mark Wahlberg had a priest friend who was telling him the story about Father Stu, and he liked it so much, he decided it needed to be a movie. So, like, I believe Mark Wahlberg funded a lot of the making of the movie. So he plays Father Stu in the movie, and maybe we just start with what you guys thought about the movie in general.
Yeah, so as maybe many have heard, first thing is a language warning for sure.
We have not talked about this. That's just what I was going to say. I was startled by the language.
I have it in my notes as well.
Whoa.
As probably three who are not typically too startled by language, but it's definitely trying to portray just the depths of maybe where he started and what he went through. And so, yeah, language warning first thing off. But I thought it was very well made. And yeah, I think it conveyed a lot of truths about seminary that I thought was like,
yeah, that's funny.
The one scene, which, yeah, blanket spoiler alert, but
if like, you haven't seen it,
should stop through, listening.
Yeah. Stop listening. Don't listen to this episode if you don't want it to be spoiled. So
we don't have enough control or planning to not give spoilers in there. It's probably going to happen.
So he's in the seminary and he's walking. I think he's praying his rosary. They're just walking outside. Then you figure out it's kind of just a daydream while he's in the chapel, but it's just this other seminarian that they don't quite get along. And so it's just this daydream of him basically just beating him in the face. And it's like, I've been there. You know, like community life, there's just always friction. And so
there is.
There's good and bad to that. But that was just a very, I had felt that before. So
there was a quote from an archbishop who said that Father Stu did more in his few years as a priest than he had done in his 40 years as a priest and bishop. And so there's a wonderful scene at the end where, so he is basically confined to a wheelchair and to a bed.
Power
he can't
chair.
Really go. Uh-huh. He can't really go anywhere or do anything. But there's this image of people lined up all out of the rest home that basically he has to live in. And so even what he was able to provide, which was hope, comfort, the sacrament of confession, and some peace in suffering, people flocked to. Mm-hmm. And so he gave what he had at that time, and that changed throughout his life, and that was always enough. Whatever he had was enough.
Yeah. It's a minor note, but there are big things for me just in the movie world. It had a great soundtrack.
Like yeah.
Music, it had some of my favorite artists in there.
Elvis.
Had some Elvis. It had Odetta, who's a great blues singer from the 50s, 60s. Had the Black Keys, one of my favorite songs, Sinister Kid, as he's walking into.
That was a perfect song.
It was. It was great. Just he's walking into the seminary to apply it, and their Black Keys, their song Sinister Kid, just, yeah, great soundtrack. So a little country, little folk, little blues, little rock and roll.
It also did the Catholic stuff really well, which you would hope would be obvious, but is often not the case in movies.
It's not the case in most movies.
Where and things that maybe most people don't even notice, but even the confiteor and things like that is right on. And the vestments were just, I've seen that vestment. I've worn that vestment before. Those are really small things, but for a Catholic, it's a very comforting, hey, they did their research on this. And Mark Wahlberg obviously is a practicing Catholic, so he would have, but that they took time to get those things right. And there are just so many of the Catholic conversations that were very natural conversations that I have been in, as Garrett's saying, many, many times before.
Yeah. I liked there are several points in the movie they really focused in on the rosary specifically, like someone praying that or in difficult moments, they've got their rosary in their hands multiple times in the movie. And I found myself wondering, were they doing that just because it's such an iconic symbol of Catholicism? Like, okay, let's anchor this movie in Catholicism. Let's have the rosary. Or if it's because Mark Wahlberg or Mel Gibson or Father Stu had a particular and distinct devotion to the rosary. I don't know, but I just thought that was a real cool element because there's been so many times where I'm working through decisions and I've just got my rosary in my hand walking around or figuring things out. So I like that little, a subtle piece, but a really cool piece to me.
And that brings up a point, like I noticed once I left and I just wanted to learn more about him and then went and researched what I could on the internet just about the real Father Stu.
Yo también.
And it's like, as usually happens, like the real life story is way better than the movie. And it's almost disappointing. And you can't do that in a whatever 2-hour movie. You can't do it all. But maybe it achieved its goal in that I was intrigued enough by the actual man and went and researched him and found a lot even more comfort and a challenge to me and my priesthood from the actual man, not just this character in the movie. So
yeah, in researching him, there were definitely some things I want to get into, like differences from the movie in real life that I think are important differences. But I did the same thing, like, oh, I got to read more about this life. And that in of itself, if that's the only reaction this movie brings to other people, that's a worthwhile thing as well.
What were some of the distinctions that you wish they had gone more into?
Well, before we get to that, just first impression. So I think you guys both really liked the movie. Is that
really enjoyed it?
I think I'm a little bit cooler on it. I mean, not bad.
No,
not bad. I enjoyed it. It'd probably be C+, B-, so upper middle level for me.
I would say yeah, a B. I mean,
because B was going to be for me. B.
Yeah, there's a few things that we'll touch on that I didn't love or I didn't think it portrayed perfectly, but overall, I would encourage most people to go see it as long as they're okay with the language.
Right. Yeah, and that was interesting. So I saw it with two other priests. I went with Father Mike Baldwin and Father Mike Simone. And I think the three of us all had fairly similar reactions to it. But it was funny. We were coming out of the theater and at least two other groups of lay people that we know were also in the movie, and like they were teary-eyed and they were greatly, greatly moved by it, which again is a good thing if that movie can. So it made me think while I was driving from the movie, well, why are they so moved by it, whereas I am less so? And for me, two of the things I thought of, which I think are strengths of the movie, one of its strengths, and I think part of the language is getting at that, is it really portrays the humanness of the priesthood. Like, he's a real dude with problems, with strengths, with weaknesses. And that was always, I think, part of the real Father Stu's charm is that he came off pretty earthy. He came off pretty grounded. And so I think for many people, that's a really cool thing for them to see and experience. Less so for me, because I know priests are human. I know I can be a jerk.
I already knew that.
This is not revelatory for me. But for other people, I think some people that is like, oh yeah, they're real people too. And there's value in that. And that's a good thing. So I'm not knocking the movie for it, but I'm saying it didn't have as much of an impact on me because of that.
Sure.
The other thing I think it does a really good job, and it would be a similar thing, the movie does a wonderful job of portraying hope, of portraying redemption. Like, okay, your decisions of the past don't have to define who you are and who you will be. It does a great job of showing good that can come out of bad situations, even good that can come out of bad family situations. And I think those are immensely important messages to convey. Again, it's not revelatory maybe for me, because I feel like I spend a lot of time in my office having those exact same conversations and encouraging people to do it. So it's not like, oh, this can happen. Yeah. No, I know that. But the fact that the movie conveys it in a different language or in a different avenue and that people are able to receive that makes me really excited for the movie and makes me, yeah, it is a really good thing, even though it maybe didn't move me as much as other people coming out of the theater.
I wonder if lay people in particular have so many people in their lives, and we do, of course, as well, but loved ones who are far from the Lord and far from their faith. And I do wonder, particularly, I think a lot of moms have gone and seen this movie, which seems a little strange because of the language, but maybe there's this experience of thinking about their loved ones, maybe their kids or siblings or things who maybe aren't as far away as Father Stu was, or maybe they are, but that there is hope that the Lord can and will do something in their lives to bring them back as well. So I do wonder if a lot of people have particular people in their minds and in their hearts that they're thinking about, hopefully conversion be possible for them.
But I've had the similar experience talking with other priests that have seen it. And I don't know if that's just because we're more critical than other people, or, but it's trying to portray our life in a sense and what seminary is like and what priesthood is like, and they're never going to do it perfectly.
Right.
So I think maybe that's why generally priests are a little cooler on it than just the regular lay faithful, because we're aware of the realities already and have a more of a critical eye towards it.
What's the best priest portrayal in a movie?
Oof.
That might be a whole pod.
Yeah. I think of some of the movies that I love of Gods and Men, the movie on the French Trappist in Algeria. There's some great portrayal of priesthood in that. Heroically, I love The Crimson and the Black. Gregory Peck, true story of the Irish bishop smuggling Jews out of Rome during World War II. What's the Robert De Niro, Jeremy Irons, South American?
Oh, The Mission.
The Mission.
Oh, yeah.
I like some of the internal struggles, that how they take obedience with the church and things like that. There's some great portrayals in that. But other than that, those are the ones that come to mind.
Yeah. We'll think about it a little bit.
Yeah.
But you didn't even say Bing Crosby.
What? I know he's a priest, and which one is it?
Going My Way and Bells of St. Mary's. That's kind of like the famous, like, very 1940s,
1950s. You and my mother would just love movies together.
I love Bells of St. Mary's.
I don't think I've ever seen it. That's okay,
let's move on with the poem.
That's how my mother would react too.
We'll do that sometime. We'll do maybe a top five of our priests and movies or something like that.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
The Priest and MASH.
I don't like him.
I've never seen MASH. I just know he's a Jesuit priest in MASH.
He's such a pushover, and like, have some conviction about the gospel, man. You're ministering to soldiers. Grow a pair.
That's so funny. Oh, man. So,
no, but I don't like him. Father Mulcahy was his name.
Okay. But I do think Gary makes a good point of it being like trying to express our lives. And so we do have maybe a more critical or thought through experience of it than most other people.
Did you go and read more about Father Drew?
Yeah, same thing.
Father Drew, about Father Stu, Drew?
I'm confused now, but yeah.
Me too. There are a couple things that, like, when I was reading about his life, I felt that's really important to differentiate between the movie and real life. One, and this is a particular pet peeve of me because it's a Hollywood trope. It gets played out along, but big, bad church getting in the way of. So if you've seen the movie, Father Stu is growing in all of these ways and he's touching people's lives, and the seminary was against him entering, but they finally let him in. He makes all this progress, and then the seminary rector has to come and say, I'm sorry, the diocese won't ordain you. You should just go home. And he goes home. And then eventually he gets ordained because, as they say in the movie, the parish saw how good he was and petitioned the bishop, and the seminary went and fought for him, which is a classic Hollywood institutional church is bad guy and doing that. That is not actually how it played out in his life. And the way in which it played out his life certainly is more true to my experience of the church and how I know the church. So he goes into seminary, and it's actually the seminary that raises questions of whether he should be ordained or not because of his degenerative disease, which is a seminary's responsibility to say, hey, realize this.
It absolutely is. I mean, that's something as priests, I think probably why we had some reactions to it. It's like, no, that probably there's some realistic points there that need to be made and discussed. And
that's a legitimate thing to discuss. Yeah. Discuss and pray about and that. And so the seminary raises these concerns. And I was reading a write-up from his bishop who ordained him. He said he took those in and he really struggled for several weeks in prayer about this. And what he just kept coming back to was that there was power in suffering. And there was a redemptive work to be done in suffering. And so he decided unequivocally to ordain Father Stu. So it was never the diocese saying, oh, we don't know this guy. It was the seminary doing its job, some could say, about raising concerns. The bishop took that to heartfelt prayer, struggled and wrestled with it, tried to listen to the Lord with it, and came to a conclusion that, yes, this man should be ordained, and they let him know. So there was never this going home like, oh, I'm going to be ordained, and they just spring an ordination. Yeah. That part made me roll my eyes a little bit. Like,
rolls up to
what?
A church.
Very Hollywood. Doesn't even know he's I'm getting ordained today?
But then he had a deacon's stole on.
Yeah.
That was confusing. Little, was he a deacon? No, I mean, they're just tricking us. I was like, that's actually very realistic. He would already be a deacon, so.
Yeah.
Funny. So those parts only us noticed.
Yeah.
And that would be lost on a lot of other people. But I think it's important. No, the church was in his life was not the enemy or was not trying to hold him back or looking at only the surface level of these things and forgetting the deeper aspects of who he was. The opposite. The opposite was taking place.
Yeah. And especially I felt it was conveying like the church, the institution doesn't want to ordain you because it's too much money. And because it would like go against the prestige or, you know, the look of the church. Yeah. And it's just like, no, like one, there could be legitimate concerns that the seminary raised about physical capability to exercise ministry. And that's a question you have to raise. And as you said, it's taken a heartfelt prayer. The bishop discerns, diocese discerns, and he was supported and ordained. So yeah, that it just seemed, I don't know if most people felt that or not. Maybe that was again, another critical eye of a priest who's been through formation. But yeah, it's not like the church is just looking out for herself and like, well, this guy is had too much of a checkered past. Yeah. He's going to look bad. That's not the church's bank.
Not what was taking place. The other big piece, and I remember watching the movie, I'm like, because I went to the movie, we had discussed doing a podcast on it. So I knew we were going to do a podcast on it before I went to the movie. So I'm kind of keeping that in mind as I'm watching it. And they've got, it is a fun scene in the movie for Hollywood where he like walks in, he's sent in his letter of application and half the money to go to seminary. He walks in, Black Keys playing in the background. And the rectors are like, oh, I don't know if we can share you. But it's all in this, he broke up with his girlfriend the next day applying to seminary. And I'm watching this, I'm like, okay, how do I convey to guys that, yes, that's really cool in the movie, but that is not how you should do discernment. That is terrible discernment. Please don't show up in my office because you just got out of the hospital from a near-death experience. You decide you're going to be a priest. That is not how things are done. That's also not how Father Stu did
it. Yeah.
Not at all, actually, how his discernment played. And his real-life discernment was actually really good and much more like how it should be done. Again, it's the difference between movie magic and reality.
He spent like 3 years teaching in a Catholic school, right?
He wanted to learn his faith.
He wanted to see, hey, is this something that's sticking? And then he joins for the Franciscans for a little bit.
CFRs in the Bronx.
Yeah. They're discerning with him and things like that. But that's a boring movie.
Right.
To be fair, that's not that exciting.
No one wants to watch someone go into Steubenville for 4 years to get a master's degree in philosophy.
So I understand those things.
But so it was a prolonged discernment. 3 years teaching, then 2 years with the friars, and it was in his discernment with the friars, at least the article that I read, the friars encouraged him to move towards. So again, the church helping him move towards where the Lord was pulling him. So the friars actually encouraged him to discern diocesan priesthood, and he went back in, and there was no fight to get into seminary. They received him into seminary, and he started going into seminary. That was good discernment. You know, when he was baptized, did he know steps A to Z? No. You know, okay, well, this is the next step I need to do. This is the next step. And people came in and assisted him in that discernment, and that brought him towards the priesthood. So yeah, you're right. It doesn't make a good movie that way. But someone also, if they're serious about discernment, shouldn't walk away from the movie and be like, this is how it's done. Because it's not. Not even for him.
Because that's what I texted Chad. I was like, especially just thinking of the movie portrayal of it. Of like, if you're that vocation director, what do you do with Stuart Long that walks in your office? And like you're saying, you're not going to be like, oh, great. Sounds like God's really doing something in your life. Let's send you off to seminary. It's like, whoa, we got to slow down. We got to make sure. And you're not the big bad church of rejecting this guy who's had a great experience of God. That's just the patience that's needed to verify the authenticity of a call.
You know what I thought about? I thought about the Bishop of Mexico City when Juan Diego shows up saying that Mary said to build a house and build a church, and that some people give him grief for not believing, even though he's a good bishop. And so whenever I'm preaching about it, it's like, what would you do? You wouldn't say, that's a good point, Juan. I guess if you said,
here's all the money you need for a church.
If you said so. Of course, in retrospect, it looks that way. But there's due diligence in all of these things that have to take place.
Yeah, those are like my two big caveats for the movie. But beyond that, I think the messages people can walk away from that are fantastic, are really good.
One thing, even though, again, it was just the dramatic way for them to express it in Hollywood, but you know, even his ordination, I thought that was cool because it seems like a lot of what they're trying to convey is he's this boxer. You know, that's what he's a fighter, and he's not going to let anything stop him. And he's going to get what, you know, he feels he's called to, or what he wants and what he needs. But at some point, you can't achieve the priesthood. And so he can be a fighter and a boxer. Mm. But at some point, the church has to provide and gift you with the priesthood. Mm-hmm. And that was conveyed in a way that his parish had to step in and plead for him.
Even I thought was the two people helping lower him onto the ground.
That was, I thought, the best scene in the movie of him being having to that as priests, having had that experience of going down prostrate at your ordination and them having to help him do that. I got a little emotional in that moment.
Yeah. I thought that was one of the beautiful pieces. And I think you're right, Garrett. I think that's just a great way to convey the truth of that reality.
I liked when they were in the prison and he's talking to the prisoners and it was kind of a cheesy Hollywood scene. The uptight guy can't do it, but the guy who's seen stuff can. So it was a cheesy scene, but I did appreciate this image of his past and his experience and his faults and his failures then become the thing that allow him to better minister. Mm-hmm. Kanye's got a great line about this.
Of course he does.
I'm trying to right my wrongs, but it's funny. The same wrongs help me write these songs.
Yes. Wow.
So you can use that if you need to.
I will.
Something true about that, not glorifying in your wrongs, but it's like the image in C.S. Lewis in Great Divorce, when that little lizard that's tempting the man, read The Great Divorce if you haven't, but there's a lizard that's tempting a man to lust that eventually turns into a great stallion that he rides off into the sunset. But that those things, those faults, those failures, those pains, when redeemed by the Lord, don't just go away, then they actually are an instrument for ministry, evangelization, for service.
And even though it is exaggerated in that scene, the uptight seminarian, you know, okay, there are some of those types in seminary, we've known that, and part of what they're doing, we would call that pastoral work or apostolics. It is supposed to stretch a man with that. It's like I was watching that scene. One of the things I was thinking about when I went off to theology, my theology one, my job was teaching fourth grade CCD PSR at a school. Theology two, I was at Baltimore prison halfway house teaching guys religion class. So talk about a huge jump. Yeah. I don't think I was like the uptight guy. I like to think I was a little more like Father Stu, but I also had to learn the most popular person in that religion class was a former convict who is now a Muslim imam. And so talking with him was great conversations and just paying attention to how he interacted and how I learned a lot from him. Mm. So I was watching that scene. I was thinking of me and one other guy at our time at the Baltimore Corrections Facility, which is a rough neighborhood.
You need different lesson plans for that. You could just reuse the fourth grade.
Yeah.
I thought it was cool. And they get close to expressing this in the movie, but they're not explicit about it because his parents get back together. They've been separated, but they still have wedding rings, but they very clearly are not together. And they come back together through this experience. But his parents actually both became Catholic through the experience, went through RCIA, which I thought just was an extra element that was very cool that they, and how many of us have seen that in our parents in one way or another, maybe not that dramatically, but their faith be strengthened by their son becoming a priest. Mm-hmm. And so that was a very practical thing that I thought was a cool of his life.
Which I thought that whole subplot with Mel Gibson as the dad, one, it was felt kind of meta just with Mel Gibson's faith and his own struggles and what he's doing. So I wonder how intentional that is for them, especially when I read afterwards, that's really not a very accurate portrayal at all of Father Stu's dad. Like he worked away from the home, but at least the things I read, he came home and he was pretty loved and they liked spending time with him. The best when they asked his dad about it, like, how do you feel about Mel Gibson's pretty unloving portrayable. He laughs. He's like, the movie's about Father Stu. I don't care how they play me. And which is a beautiful, loving father's response. Like, this isn't about me. Why do I care what it looks like? If it helps tell my son's story, you take all the liberties you want. I thought that was really cool.
And they said his parents were super involved in the making of the movie. And so
were they? Okay.
Yeah, I think they were involved and his priest friends and things were part of it. And so it wasn't just this unauthorized thing that they jammed through.
And you mentioned the boxing earlier. I don't know if you read that he was actually introduced to boxing by a Catholic priest.
Oh, really?
So he went to college. He went to a Catholic college. This was pre-conversion, but he was going to a Catholic college to play football. And one of his professors there was a priest and just saw his personality and how he liked to debate and do more one-on-one and thought he would be good at boxing. So encouraged him and got him involved in boxing. So before he ever really started converting, it was a Catholic priest that showed him how to box. And he did go on and he was like the Missouri or Montana Golden Glove champion of 1985 or something like that. Catholic Church helping him along even before. What did you guys think about the whole girlfriend? I don't know the reality of that.
Right.
Some of those lines were a little heavy-handed. I'm Catholic. We don't have sex before marriage.
Absolutely.
You're right, but it's not just a Catholic thing. Yeah. Or is that, and that's not something a normal girl would say on second meeting of a boy that's hitting on her. By the way, and any girl that speaks in that tone of voice, you should run away.
I thought that was largely very, like when she introduced him as his boyfriend, or said, she said, who are you? I'm his girlfriend or something like that. I was like, I don't know. Are you guys dating? I'm still confused. I never saw where the spark, why do you like him? I don't understand where that popped up. So I was confused about that.
And that it kind of, I would say, we'll say implied premarital sex before happened there. And she's like, you're undercutting her whole character. Like you've presented her all along about this faithful
And then she's mad he's becoming a priest.
Yeah.
Things like that, which
I feel like they did her. I mean, again, I don't know the full reality. They didn't go into the relationship that he was in prior to that, but I feel like they were doing a disservice to her character. Again, I'm suspecting that's more Hollywood magic, amp the drama up than maybe reality of relationship.
And even for what I read, I thought like his first thought of priesthood came when he got baptized, which I think was he was kind of just getting baptized so he could marry her.
Mm-hmm.
And so like the timeline is just a little off to where it was like in the movie, it's almost portrayed. He's like just going through this thing just so he could possibly date her. And then at some point, I guess they are dating and then it's the accident and all this stuff. So yeah, it seems like as with most of it, the real story is much better and they kind of have to have some romance in there. That's Hollywood, but
yeah, it's hard to make a movie be hard.
Yeah.
And so
I will say I appreciate if they're going to imply premarital sex, the way they did it was about as good as Hollywood can do it. You know, there was no visual element to, you know, pull away from that or to cause scandal or things like that. So at least, you know, they didn't go that route.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. I don't know that I'd go again. I've told people to go and see it. It edified me and it made me want to be a better priest and energized me. Beyond that, again, it's not a 5-star. It's not going to win any Academy Awards, but I was encouraged in my priesthood.
I think that's been my similar response to people. Like, I don't think I'll see it again, but it was a good movie. I've seen a lot of worse movies and I can see where it would have the power to move and inspire people. And so as long as we were saying, you're not offended by the language, be aware of that. If that's not going to be a deterrent to you, then yeah, it's a movie with a good message. If nothing else, that there is value in suffering, which is truly a prophetic in today's world, that suffering is not just to be avoided. I can't think of any other movie in recent years that would convey anything like that. So again, it's got a lot of positive things that can do a lot of positive, I think, in people's hearts and convey it in a way that they may not hear otherwise.
And someone said that they bought a ticket if only so that more movies like this would get more.
That's fair.
Like, I'm glad this exists and it's not perfect, but I am glad it exists. And I would love for there to be shown that there is a appetite out there for these types of movies that are explicitly Catholic and they don't shy away from those types of things. So I think there's something to be said for that.
I agree. Any closing thoughts, Gare?
Yeah, just what you guys said. And I think take it with a grain of salt maybe. And if you've heard what we said, take with that when you go watch it. But it's cool just to see Catholic things and a priest portrayed on the big screen and done well, not kind of a cheesy, cheap movie. And so go support it. And I think you'll be challenged and your faith will be deepened just by the experience of watching it.
Yeah. Well, thanks for listening to About 4 o'clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. Father Garrett has the final word today.
This comes from Father Bernard Bro. He's a Dominican. It's also sometimes the kids just call me bro. So I say that's Father Bro to you. So maybe that's why I like Father Bro. But he says, a person does not pray primarily to find himself, but to give himself, to enter into a plan of salvation that goes beyond himself. What is important is not our experience, but the gift we make of ourselves.
See you next week.